I call the State Government Finance meeting of February 17, 2015 to order, and we'll just wait till we get a quorum to get the minutes approved, but we'll start with the meeting. And Don Kerr, if you could state your name and your title and who you represent here to the committee, we can get started.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Don Kerr. I'm the Executive Director of the Department of Military Affairs. General Nash sends his regrets. He's actually in Pennsylvania this morning attending a ceremony, or he would be here to represent the agency along with me. And we're going to give you an update today on our change items to the budget and answer any questions that you may have of us. And with that, I'll move on to the next one. I did provide a copy of these. They should have been in your packets for you. As we were preparing our budget this year, we identified a couple of areas, and the staff went to work to try to figure out how can we solve these problems in one fell swoop. And we have been noticing for the last couple of years that we've been under-executing our enlistment incentives account. We aren't 100% sure why. We know what some of the indicators are, but we clearly had a trend that we felt we could deal with, and we also know that we are under-supported in the maintenance appropriation. We'll talk about that here coming forward, but we saw a way to solve that problem internally without asking for additional appropriation from the legislature above the base, simply by moving some money around inside our appropriation. We also had been doing a progression forward, noting that we did see a future shortfall in our general support account. So I should probably start with the general overview. We have four appropriations out of the general support account, or out of the general fund. One of those is the emergency services account. That emergency services account is based on a running 8-year average of what state active duty events have cost. So they take, MMB takes the previous 8 years, throws out the high and the low, and the average of the remaining 6 years is what they automatically put into that appropriation. We may or may not spend that amount. The way state active duty, once the governor declares an emergency, the funding that support that emergency comes directly from the general fund, and there is not a limit on the amount that is taken, so there's really not a control, but it does give us a base amount from which to work in the event of a state active duty event. The other three appropriations, the largest one is the enlistment incentives account. That's about half of our budget currently, and we use that to fund the state tuition reimbursement program, other educational incentives, and enlistment bonuses in order to incentivize the readiness of the Minnesota National Guard. We're quite cautious about how we use that funding. We don't try to spend that every year, and that particular appropriation or sub-appropriation has carry-forward authority, which is very useful for us in being able to weather the changes that occur in federal policy as we move that forward.
If you don't mind, we'll just go through and have questions as we go.
That's fine, Mr. Chair.
Representative Kahn.
I'm interested in the enlistment incentives mm-hmm. account. Is that are there people being turned down from that?
Mr. Kerr?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, no, the state tuition, while within the enlistment incentives account, we actually fund a number of programs. So the state tuition reimbursement account, all members who have completed basic training, who have joined the National Guard and have completed basic training, are eligible to use that. That pays up to 100% of their tuition based on the University of Minnesota rates for both undergraduate and graduate level programs. So anyone that's a member of the National Guard is eligible to use that. The enlistment bonuses that are funded from that account are only provided to soldiers and airmen who enlist into specific military occupational specialties that are a shortage or hard to fill in the National Guard. And so those bonuses are only offered to those individuals.
Okay. The question I was asking is, are there more applicants than awards? Are you finishing? Are you turning people away is, I guess, my question.
Mr. Kerr?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, no. In fact, the opposite is true. We're actually under-executing the account. We have funds that are available in excess of our needs at this time, and we're looking to try to make a change in that appropriation this year, a fairly dramatic change, but we've been very careful to make sure that we minimize any risk that we might take in having to get to a situation where we turn down people in the future.
And Mr. Kerr, is that sometimes affected by our numbers that were authorized by the active component that they're what Congress says that the National Guard can have, and the and the Department of Military Affairs at the national level says this is what the Minnesota National Guard is going to be authorized to fill?
Mr. Chair, that very much affected by that and a number of other factors, and the amount that we spend from that account is also affected by the federal benefits that are available, because we do use that state dollars as last money in. We do require use of federal programs, or encourage in some cases, depending on eligibility, use of federal programs before we use the state dollars.
Representative Kahn.
Is there any chance of using some of this to pay down student debt? I'm just worried that it's not well known enough in terms of people who are eligible for it are not using it. And I don't know if you've done any survey to find this, or if there are any people in the National Guard who have assumed a fair amount of student debt. And, you know, is that, have you ever looked at that? Have they gotten into the National Guard maybe after? You know, I mean, the whole idea was connecting, you know, both supporting students and also using it as an incentive. So I just wonder.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, so the way the current statute is written, we don't have the authority to use it for student loan repayment. We do work closely with our service members to try to encourage them not to incur student debt beyond what's absolutely required.
Okay.
There are a number of programs that they're eligible for, and depending on the era in which they enlisted, they may or may not have been offered a federal student loan repayment program. There is the federal student loan repayment program, as with all benefits that the federal government offers, sort of wax and wane over time, and the criteria for eligibility changes frequently. And that's one of the challenges we have in managing the state dollars that we use to complement those federal benefits, is trying to get a feel for what the feds will do in the future so we get a better idea of what we need to use our resources for.
Okay. I guess, you know, knowing what we need for an educated workforce and knowing how well, in some sense, the military has prepared people for it, kind of bothers me to see money sitting in this account, and I just wonder if it's from lack of information, or we should be looking at other alternatives to fund it on things that do those two things: give us people with a military background who are educated in the kinds of fields we need.
I will, Representative Kahn, in my experience serving in the Guard, there's a lot of folks that join just to get that free tuition. So I think there's a lot of activity as far as Guard members using that availability. I think what's hurt us is we've had to reduce our numbers, which reduces the amount of people we can bring in to use those funds. I think that's part of it. There's a number of things that play into it, as Mr. Kerr has indicated, but the reduction of force does hurt us, because it's usually those newer members coming in that usually use that, and with the reduction of force and the reduction of people coming in, I think that reduces the number of people making available those funds.
Okay,
Representative Detmer?
Yeah, thank you,
Mr. Chairman. You know, my interest is how we can circle it to solve more of our problems than just using it as an enlistment incentive, using it to get people working in the areas where we are short of workers, which guarantees them a good job afterwards. So, okay.
Representative Detmer?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Kerr, when someone enlists into our service and our services, it's pretty much on their contracts, and the recruiters will go through the different benefits, the different programs that are out there for our soldiers. Is that right? I mean, when a soldier signs on the dotted line, takes the oath, they should know exactly what the benefits are out there, and it should be part of their contracts.
Mr. Kerr?
Mr. Chair, Representative Detmer, for the federal benefits that are administered through the Department of Defense, that is indeed true. There is some variation of that with the GI Bill, because eligibility for the GI Bill changes depending on how your service evolves. Some aspects of the GI Bill program you become eligible for after a certain period of time of federal service. And so they may be eligible for additional benefits that aren't recorded in their contracts. because of the way the federal government manages the GI Bill through the Department of Veterans Affairs.
Representative Mr. Chair, and just to maybe address Representative Kahn's issue about relocating funds, how is the Guard going to be taking a look at that, and do they have some solutions for it?
Mr. Kerr.
Mr. Chair, Representative Detmer, I will show you where we plan to go as far as solving our internal, but I guess I'll take the opportunity to engage something else. I know in the original budget overview, Representative Kahn did ask some questions about the efficiency or effectiveness of the tuition reimbursement program and the enlistment incentives account. And I guess I'll take the opportunity to throw this out. So we pulled some data. In terms of education in the Minnesota National Guard, currently 29.1%, so nearly a third of our members in the National Guard have some college. And that's because we're trying to draw those types of people because we do believe that education pays and the quality of our force is very important to us. 13.2% have completed baccalaureate degrees, and 3.2% actually have advanced degrees, and a number of our service members are using these programs to pursue continuing education, either through attaining a baccalaureate degree, an associate's degree, or an advanced degree. So we feel very strongly that this program has allowed us to really enhance the quality of our force, and that serves the people of Minnesota in a number of ways, not only through their direct service in the National Guard, but also because the members of the National Guard are also out there serving in our communities as employees, as business owners, as members of government, and we think that's very important. The other real competitive advantage that this program gives us, and we're very interested in this as well, right now the Minnesota National Guard has 45% of the market share of all young people that join the military from Minnesota. 45% go into the Minnesota National Guard, Army or Air. And we're very proud of that. And we can attribute that to, there are a number of reasons why that might be, but the only competitive advantage we have that we can quantify is the existence of the state tuition reimbursement program. That's what gives us our competitive advantage against the Army Reserve, the Naval Reserve, the Air Force Reserve, the U.S. Army, the Coast Guard, the Army Reserve, I'm going to say Army Reserve twice, and the Marine Corps. So from an efficiency and effectiveness perspective, Representative Kahn, I think we're very proud of what we do with it. We also are very cautious about how we use it. We have not gone back and looked at how we can simply distribute the funds among our force. We're very cautious about trying to enhance the readiness of the National Guard with the funds that are provided to us through this appropriation.
Thank you, Mr. Kerr. And I think right now, I think Representative Pugh, have you had a chance to review the minutes of February 12th?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So moved.
So moved. So all those in favor of approving the minutes from February 12, 2015 of the State Government Finance Committee, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion carries. Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A little bit off the mark, but there's a couple of questions. When you are winnowing out your service people because as I'm saying, I think a lot of things depend on not your contract, but the needs of the service, and they change often. So do you use first in, first out when you're winnowing?
Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, no, we do not. We, sure, and we do some winnowing. That's not exactly what we call it.
I know.
Usually when a service member exceeds 20 years in service and they're eligible for retirement, we look at qualitative retention factors. So we do analyze our force based on the needs of the service, and we compare a number of things, civilian education, military education, general job performance, and other factors. So the first in, first out is only a factor in putting someone into the window of eligibility to be reviewed. Does that answer your question?
Thank you.
Mr. Kerr, continue.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, looking at the basis of our appropriations and looking at the challenges that we felt we had with the appropriations, we, after some extensive staff work, made the following recommendations, three change items. Because the enlistment incentives account is a carry-forward appropriation, right now we expect at the end of this year we'll be carrying forward about $20 million, so about two full years of appropriation in that account. We feel that's way more than we need to have a comfortable cushion as we make adjustments to the program, and we felt that moving $10 million out of that account was something that was sustainable over the long term, And by moving that into our maintenance appropriation would give us the opportunity to make up for some of the shortfall we had in a lack of funding in the bonding request last year and other pent-up maintenance issues that we have statewide. Our second change item is an annual reallocation of $3 million a year. So taking the appropriation where we know we're getting too much money based on our current performance and reducing the amount that's going into that annually to move that into the maintenance appropriation over the longer term. So again, a one-time bump of $10 million and a longer-term bump of $3 million per year into the maintenance appropriation. And then an annual allocation of $460,000 from the incentives appropriation into the general support appropriation. And that was specifically to solve a challenge that we identified. The agency did not have a long-term plan to replace our wheeled vehicle fleet. We have about 75 wheeled vehicles, combination of dump trucks and vans and pickups that we use to support operations at Camp Ripley and around the state. And we didn't have a long-term strategy to replace those. When I looked into that, we're running a van on Camp Ripley that we bought in 1978. And there was no plan to replace that except drive it till she blows and then ask for more money from the general support appropriation. So we've taken a look at that over the last 8 months and said, okay, when do we need to replace these vehicles based on what they're used for? For example, the bucket truck, the cherry picker that the electricians at Camp Ripley use, though it's quite old, we don't put very many miles on it. We use it a couple times a year. We can probably take some risk and keep an older bucket truck in place. But the vehicles that we're using to support our maintenance team that goes out to the armories, we have to look more carefully at a program to replace those vehicles when we know they're going to wear out. So we're adding that into a program, and I'll give you some detail on that in a minute. But I would add that these three change items result in zero net growth to the agency's budget. We're coming in asking for the same base we've asked for the last two biennials. So in our staff process, we're very enamored with facts and assumptions, and so we identified a large number of facts. I've given you some of the highlights here. The first fact, and I won't hit them all, but I'll talk about the first one. So in Minnesota statute, agencies are supposed to be requesting maintenance funding for 1% of the archivist replacement value, and our archivist replacement value is $1 billion. We've only been asking for $660 million. We should be asking for about $10 million. So getting us closer to $10 million is closer to where we need to be. We also looked at, because we had a complementary federal program looking at the status of our facilities, when they evaluated our facilities, they say that the replacement value is $1.59 billion. So a little difference of opinion what the value of our facilities is worth. That may or may not be relevant. The statute says we use archivists, so we use archivists, but it still gets us to the number that we need. And clearly the $6.66 million is underfunding that. We know that construction and renovation costs are increasing. We also know that the average age of our facilities is rising. Every year, they all get a year older. We have a significant backlog of maintenance, and I already talked about the state vehicle replacement, and of course employee costs continue to rise. We did factor in the 1.8% that you've heard so much about as part of that increase in not just the general support appropriation, but we also have personnel costs inside the maintenance appropriation and a small amount inside the enlistment incentives appropriation. Additional facts moving forward, and again, these are in your packet, so if you'd like some more information on these, but we are projecting that there will be about $20 million left in the incentives account at the end of this year, and obviously that's going to continue to grow on 1 July. If we went along on the same path and the legislature appropriated the same amount they had before, we'd be sitting on $30 million on the 1st of July. With probably a requirement for about 6.5. So that we clearly have a problem there. We have looked at our expenditure average. The expenditure average over the last 5 years is $6.5 million. Prior to that period, though, it was running at the $10 million a year mark. And we're looking very carefully and are having difficulty getting granularity on why we've had such a reduction in utilization of our state tuition reimbursement program. We think there are a couple of things that are factoring it. The biggest one, we think, is the impact of the GI Bill utilization. Many of our service members are opting to use GI Bill benefits that are covering 100% of their tuition up front and holding their state tuition reimbursement eligibility in abeyance for further use in the future, and that's reducing utilization of the challenge that we have is because the Department of Defense doesn't manage the GI Bill program, we can't get data from the Department of Veterans Affairs to know how many of our service members are actually using which program. So trying to get our arms around the data on this has been a very interesting challenge. We also think that the economy is having an effect on this. We think that when the economy was down in the middle part of the last decade, we saw a lot of folks who were turning to use their education benefits to go to school. If they couldn't get a job, they may as well be in school. We think the fact that there is a good job available, there may be some deference in some of the use of the state tuition reimbursement program. And we also know that some changes we made in policy to ask our service members to use federal benefits before they came for state tuition reimbursement had an effect. Mm-hmm. We know that that effect is changing because the feds have changed the rules on eligibility for federal tuition assistance, making that much more difficult to get. So we're reluctant to look at the linear regression that will get us because we know that the facts have changed, and so that'll give us a different outcome.
Thank you. And we'll got a question here from Chair Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Kerr, have you found that the universities and colleges have been helpful to folks? Have they been good partners in helping our military personnel?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, beyond a doubt, particularly our relationship with MNSCU. MNSCU has really worked hard to partner with us. The University of Minnesota has also been very user-friendly, as have all the private colleges. There is a lot of goodwill toward veterans and service members out there, and there's a lot of that in the education community as well. And we feel very strongly supported by that sector.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Kerr. If I understand what you said in regards to the incentive program in regards to tuition, it sounds like what you're saying is that there may be a lot of individuals that are holding their opportunities, their benefits for later. Does that give you cause to be concerned of that forward, basically a liability in the future that in which we could end up with a surge of usage?
Mr. Kerr?
Mr. Chair, Representative Petersburg, yes, sir, indeed it does. However, we do know that that's very predictable. The obligations that we take on, for example, on an enlistment or reenlistment bonus, those bonuses are not paid out in a lump sum. They're paid out over many years. And so we know pretty precisely what our obligation will be 4 years from now based on what we do this year. We also can throttle that down. So we do have some ability. If we start seeing a trend that we're going to run out of money, we can reduce the number or the amount of the enlistment bonuses that we're offering. The state tuition reimbursement program is a little bit different. We know generally what our obligation is, and we have a long history of what our utilization rates are. What we're finding, though, is we're not 100% confident that we can tell you exactly what we're going to use next year based on not being able to control the federal eligibility. However, we feel we're taking a very conservative approach and leaving enough of a cushion in our accounts to cover any obligations that we may have, even in the worst-case scenarios, as we've been able to derive them.
Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And with the tuition reimbursement program now, some soldiers are waiting for their spouses or their children to utilize these funds, too. So there's a delay there, too, isn't there? Isn't that correct?
Mr. Kerr?
Mr. Chair, Representative Detmer, yes, that's true. The legislature did open the eligibility to include spouses. However, that eligibility does come off of the members' total eligibility. So we didn't actually incur any additional obligation. But we did create a situation where we also now have obligation for 2 years beyond the end of an enlistment. So our program used to only cover service members while they were in service. We did extend that to cover 2 years beyond, and that was something the legislature did 4 or 5 years ago to cover some concerns. Some of our service members joined and then had planned to go to college but were mobilized and deployed. Obviously, being mobilized and deployed kind of slows down your graduation plan a little bit, and they wanted to be able to get those benefits, and I think it was an appropriate use. So it doesn't create a big problem for us, but we do have some lingering obligation for 2 years beyond the end of the term of service.
Representative Nash.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Mr. Kerr, thank you for this report so far. I'm very impressed and commend you all for really sound fiscal discipline. My question is of a bit of a different nature. What is the utilization, if any, of MINUTE? Because I didn't see that in here and would have some questions about that, given the more technical nature of the military now utilizing IT and such.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Kerr.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nash, yeah, I was kind of anticipating this one. So the Department of Military Affairs doesn't actually operate on MINUTE's network. We are not in compliance with state law because federal law precludes us from being in compliance. We operate on the Department of Defense's network, and by law and regulation are specifically prohibited from subordinating control of the Department of Defense network to anyone other than a federal employee. However, we are close partners with Minutes. We are service. We do have a service level agreement with Minute. It's not as extensive as most state agencies because we don't receive the bulk of our IP. We do actually buy services from them. We buy bandwidth from Minute. We collaborate closely with regard to the protection of Minute's network based on what we can share on our protection of the Department of Defense network. So I'm not sure if I'm answering your question, but we do kind of operate in our own realm, but we work closely with Minute and have a great relationship with them, and do have a service level agreement with them and provide and purchase some services from them.
Mr. Chair, follow-up. Mr. Kerr, thank you. For those services that you do contract with, have you looked at, given the recent OLA report, are they part of the part that was charged back too high? Are you in compliance with, are they in compliance with service level expectations, pricing, and so on?
Mr. Kerr.
Mr. Chair, Representative Ash, so when I said we're customers of Minute, that's exactly what we are. We only buy services from Minute if they're the cheapest purveyor of them. So we haven't had a problem with the chargebacks, we only use them when we need to, when they can provide the best service. We do buy some fiber optic from them as well. They provide some infrastructure support, and I'm not 100% sure how that works, but periodically they will run fiber to our facilities that then we'll purchase bandwidth over the fiber, even though they don't have any control over a network. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you describe one individual and the benefits, either at enlistment or re-enlistment? I suppose, are there cash bonuses, and what schooling is offered? You take me through the life of one of your participants.
Mr. Kerr.
Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, So I'll try to give you a little bit of a real-life example. I have a daughter and two sons-in-law that serve in the National Guard, something of the family business. My daughter enlisted in the National Guard in about 2003. At that time, she had about a two-year wait. She did receive an enlistment bonus, but she didn't receive that enlistment bonus until after she had completed her initial entry training at Fort Huachuca. So she joined the National Guard. She drilled for about 9 months. She went off to training. And she was in training for nearly a year because she had a complicated specialty. On the completion of her initial entry training, she received the first installment of her federal enlistment bonus. So she got 1/6 of that federal enlistment bonus. She then also enrolled at St. Cloud State University and started going to college. And she got two semesters under her belt when her unit was notified for mobilization. While she was there, she used the state tuition reimbursement program. She actually used her bonus money to front the first semester and then used her state tuition reimbursement money to keep herself going. So one of the things about our program is we do require the service members to find a way to pay their tuition up front, and then we reimburse them for it if they satisfactorily complete. We think that gives them incentive to stay in college because they won't get their money if they don't go, and it gets us out of the business of having to go recoup. The federal process actually does payment up front, and then we have to do a lot of recoupment. Well, we don't have to do a lot of recoupment, but if the service members fail to meet their obligations, we have to do that recoupment. Okay. So my daughter was at St. Cloud State. She's paying for college by being a member of the National Guard and by using the state tuition reimbursement program. She's mobilized and deployed to Iraq, and she spends 24 months on active duty and comes back and decides during that time that she wants to move to the University of Wisconsin at Madison. She does that. She is now eligible for the Chapter 30 GI Bill, which pays most of her tuition, no longer has to be a user of the state tuition reimbursement program, finishes her college education at the University of Wisconsin. As soon as she entered the commissioning program, lost her eligibility for her bonus. So there are a lot of complicated things that come into this and a lot of interesting fiscal aspects. So she got back, she went off to further training. Again, she received a commission through ROTC while she was there. That meant another 5 months off of training, and then came back and just got into the job market and was notified for mobilization to Afghanistan. And so mobilized and deployed with her unit to Afghanistan, came back, and I'm already too late to make the long story short because it's already pretty long, but is currently serving in the National Guard and happily married to her husband, who's also a National Guard officer, who is currently enrolled in a graduate degree program that he's using the state tuition reimbursement program to fund, and they're raising a daughter of one, two dogs, and a cat in Burnsville, and contributing helpfully to our society.
One more follow-up, Mr. Chairman. After utilizing all the benefits available and completing your degree and so forth, is there a time commitment as far as your service requirements?
Mr. Kerr?
So, Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, so for the state tuition reimbursement program, the period of obligation is your 6 years of service. That's that they have to complete that 6 years of service to be eligible, and they're eligible to use the program while they're in service and then for 2 years afterwards. And if they leave service for whatever reason, they're no longer eligible to use the program.
Thank you.
Representative Kahn.
Well, it seems, I don't know, I'm finding this terribly complicated to follow. I hope everyone else totally understands it. But I guess one of my questions is, it would seem to me that any mobilization would just be an automatic delay of the amount of time they get to use it. And do I understand that that's true?
Mr. Kerr.
Madam, Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, it's not an automatic delay. There is an automatic delay for the federal eligibility because they calculate it slightly differently. And in state statute for the state tuition reimbursement program, the only thing we put in there now is an extension beyond 2 years from when they end service. Now, they can extend their eligibility by extending their service in the National Guard.
Well, it just seems to me that anything that they have and that it's interfered with mobilization, it should be automatically extended for the amount of time of the mobilization. And then the other issue, it seems to me, since we have a reciprocity agreement with Wisconsin, why shouldn't it also apply to tuition to Wisconsin? I mean, are these changes we need to make?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Kerr.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, so she would have been eligible for the program. The reality is, though, because her Chapter 30 GI Bill covered all of her costs, the state tuition reimbursement program will not pay in excess of 100% of the cost. So we have that built into it.
Okay.
And so she didn't have to use. Now, the good news is she retains the eligibility then for those months of the number of credits for future use. And she does plan to go back and pursue an advanced degree at some point.
Okay.
Thank you. Continue, Mr.
Okay.
Kerr.
So
I guess we got one more.
Just a comment, you know, the scenario that Mr. Kerr just repeated, it's going on time and time again with young men and women who are joining our National Guard or Reserve and, you know, taking advantage of the benefits to increase their education and so forth. So it's a great program for people of all financial levels to really improve themselves. So it's a great program.
I couldn't agree more. I've got four children. one has yet to start his college programs, but the other three have zero college debt, really, because they're going through using these processes. So when people say there's not a way to go to college debt-free, there is a method to do that. Mm-hmm. It costs you in other ways. there is a cost no matter which way you do it. It just depends on which way you want to pay it. So, Mr. Kerr, if you could continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Some additional facts for you. Background, I think I've covered all of these. There have been changes to the federal programs that continue to look at, but I'm going to jump to this one. So as we looked at, okay, how far can we press this without getting into a challenge on funding future years and how much risk can we take, we did some pretty extensive calculations and found a lot of variables that affected what our burn rate is for our state tuition reimbursement program and what things can affect that. We did find that there are a couple of key factors. Number one is the increase in the cost of tuition is obviously the biggest impactor. Well, utilization of our service members. But we went worst-case scenario, and what we tried to do is provide our boss courses of action that he could choose from that were all viable that would meet the following criteria. Let's get the balance below $10 million because we felt $10 million was an adequate buffer. let's get the amount going in annually to be more closely affiliated with the amount going out annually so that we're not sitting on a huge pot of money that could be used to bid a good somewhere else in state government. And at the same time, let's not take so much risk that if something changes that we aren't accounting for, we run out of money and have to come back before this august body next year and say, yeah, we screwed up our math and we need money back now. So we're working very hard to do that. And so we equated that as saying we don't want to run through zero before 2019 in a worst-case scenario. And so these are the three courses of action that we that wound up surviving. And the red line is the most aggressive and the one that was selected by the Adjutant General for us to pursue. So we're confident based on our very careful look at many years, although we acknowledge there are a lot of variables we haven't been able to put our finger on. We think even in the worst-case scenario, if we make the changes that we're asking for today, we'll still have a healthy balance in our appropriation for the enlistment incentives part of our budget. It is our intent to watch that very closely and refine that when we come back in 2 years for our next stab at this thing to get it close. And our intent is to have that red line go horizontal somewhere above zero and below $2 million at the end of the year. That's our objective. There is some question whether we have enough control over the system to be able to do that, but we're fairly confident that we're not taking so much risk that we'll be in trouble running out of money in the incentives appropriation. So we'll be able to carry on what we feel has been a very successful and effective program that has enhanced the readiness of your National Guard and of our communities in general by making these changes. I did throw in the next chart just to give you, again, we're trying to get to the bottom of this, but when we look at the total amount of money that we've spent out of both, when you add so only a portion of what we do, but when you add the federal tuition assistance program together with the state tuition reimbursement program, that's what's paying for college tuition for your service members in the National Guard. So when you add those together, you can see that back in 2008, our total amount that we were spending was over $16 million. It flatlined to $14 million, with about $10 million of that coming out of state tuition reimbursement. And surprisingly to me, the FTA numbers were much more consistent than I thought they'd be. But for some reason, our state tuition reimbursement has been dropping pretty precipitously since 2010. And again, we don't know exactly what all the causes are there, but we can see that we think that's flattening out. And we are very confident that that $6.3 million line is about what we're going to need in the state tuition reimbursement program moving forward. And so with that, I think that brings me back to the change items. Once again, those are the things that we're asking for and what we're going to do with them. We did also provide some additional detail as to what we're going to use that $460,000 plus up in the general support appropriation. We have some pent-up demand for our vehicle replacement plan that we showed in there. We won't be able to execute the full amount. We will execute that to the amount we can, and we'll push off whatever vehicle replacements we have to push off. But we feel by, I believe, 2020 is the number that we had on the chart, we should be at parity and operating exactly where we need to be within the appropriations we provided this funding.
Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know if you still do, but you used to have federal payroll people involved, non-commissioned and maybe commissioned officers, intermixed with what the Guard was doing. That along with, is there federal money in working with you at Ripley too?
Mr. Kerr?
Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, yes, within the agency, so we're this weird blend that's authorized in Title 32 of U.S. Code of federal and state authority that manifests itself in the governor and the adjutant general. And actually, the state component of our budget, the about $20 million a year we get from the state, we've got about $400 million in direct federal appropriation and an additional $40 million in something that comes through the Master Cooperative Agreement. So the vast majority of our expenses are actually covered by the federal government. The state's contribution to the National Guard is very small in that context. And most of our full-time employees, in fact, only about 325 of our employees full-time are state employees. Most of those, all but 30 of them, are actually reimbursed by the federal government either 50-50, 80%, or 100%. I'm sorry, 75% or 100%. So there's a really very small state footprint here We're an almost totally federal entity, so about 2,000 full-time employees on the federal side. So
Ripley the same way?
Ripley is the same way. In fact, nearly everyone, I can't say nearly everyone, proportionally about the same. Most of the employees at Camp Ripley are straight federal employees. There are probably, FMO 50, probably 50 state employees working in our facilities management office. I can get the exact numbers if you'd prefer. But roughly 50 in our facilities management office that are reimbursed by the feds, but our state employees, and an additional 25 state employees that operate at Camp Ripley. But that's mostly federal employees up there, all under state control, though, serving in Title 32, which is federally funded under state control.
Thank you.
Well, if there's no other questions, Representative Anderson, or Chair Anderson, I apologize, didn't see that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Kerr, you know the question I'm going to ask, and I just want to say I appreciate the details that you've given. I wish that everyone went to the level of detail that you did here today. But I am asking for detail of the 1.8%, how that will be spent, and if you can also get back to me on where in your budget you will accommodate the pay raises that Governor Dayton has allocated. So the sooner the better. And appreciate that information. If you have it right today, that'd be even better.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I think in the spreadsheet that was included in your packet, we laid out pretty carefully what we did. First of all, our commissioner was not affected by the pay raises Governor Dayton is imposing for many years. His pay has been pegged to the active component pay scale, so that's not a factor for us. And we anticipate that the 1.8% will be used to cover increases in costs and insurance coverage for our employees. And Mr. Bell, my cover, is that close enough, or do we need more? Let me pull a spreadsheet. And let's see if the replacement plan. We didn't exactly lay out how the 1.8%, but we did show how we anticipate using the $460,000. And some of that went into the, what you see is statewide indirect costs, of course, $53,000 increase in what we saw as carrying costs for scheduled pay increases, et cetera. And, of course, we do have a little bit of a different situation in it. The Department of Military Affairs has a payroll classification that no other agency has. They're called state military employees. Again, very much like the Adjutant General, their pay, Mr. LaBelle is in the audience today. He's our Chief Financial Officer, and he is a state military employee. So his pay is tied to the federal pay scale, and so we don't have any control in how those numbers fluctuate through the bargaining agreements, and I guess we don't have any control in that either. But the state has no control over how that is because we peg those. So we do have some costs that typically rise sometimes above the rate that other state agencies have. So we're really kind of an odd duck, and it's difficult to do that. But again, because so many of our employees are reimbursed through the federal government, we have such a small number. The actual payroll costs of our agency are very, very small and just not that significant to what we do. I can give you more detail if you'd like it.
Mr. Kerr, Mr. Chair, yes, that would be, and especially because you are a different animal and that you are tied to things outside of your control or the state, outside of the state's control, I think that would be helpful. It will give us a better understanding, too. And has it been kind of the practice for your agency to label these as indirect costs then?
Mr. Kerr.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I'm not sure. Generally not. As my recollection is that we did not do it that way. But I'll get back to you with a better report with more detail.
Perfect.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, was
Chair.
Saying,
Chair.
Oh, representing that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I could, before we depart, I just wanted to make sure that Mr. Kerr, you and your staff, and indeed the members around the table serving, understand just how grateful I am for your service. I appreciate it very, very much.
Thank you. And with that, Mr. Kerr, we thank you for your report and your presentation, and I look forward to hearing the request from Chair Anderson, and thank you very much, and have a great day. And with that, I believe we're adjourned.